This is the regular monthly meeting of the Pacifica National Board. It's an open session meeting. It's Thursday, July 7th, 2022, and it is 8:41 p.m. on the East Coast. I'm Julie Hewitt, the chair of the board, and Mariana Dane, could you please call the roll?
I will do so. Teresa Allen. Okay. Bert Cohen. I hear nothing. Jim Dingaman.
Here.
Good. Vanessa Dixon Briggs.
Here.
Good. Sue Goodwin, I understand, asked for an excused absence. Heather Gray.
Here.
Good. Donna Grimes. Okay, I hear nothing. Evelia Jones. I hear nothing. Ali Lexa.
Here.
Good. Marianne Martinez. Okay. James McFadden.
Here.
Good. Darlene Pagano.
Here.
Good. Wait a minute. So, is that Marianne Martinez just coming on?
It's Evelia.
It's Evelia. Thank you. I will mark you present. Lawrence, we're waiting till later. Sean Rhodes.
I am here. Lawrence is here.
Happy birthday.
Thank you.
Sean Rhodes, did I hear?
You heard correctly.
Thank you. James Sagerton.
Here.
Good. Sharon Salam. Okay. Mark van Landert.
Present.
Good. Beth van Gunten.
Here.
Good. Egberto Willis. I'm not hearing. Okay. Susan Young.
Here. You see that Teresa came on and I'm calling Egberto and Marianne.
Okay. I did not see that Teresa came on, but thank you for calling them. Julie Hewitt.
I am here.
Okay. So thus far, Bert Cohen, Sue Goodwin, Donna Grimes, Marianne Martinez, Sharon Salam, and Egberto Willis are unaccounted for. Stephanie Wells.
Here.
Good. Julia Kennard, if you have the the ability to respond, I will mark Julia present. Polina Vasiliev.
Present.
Good. I presume Arthur Schwartz will be here later. John Tatum.
I'm here.
Good. And I am here. Okay, I do believe we have a quorum.
All right. The next of the preliminary items is the chair reading out the report outs from closed session. We've had several closed sessions since our last meeting, so this is going to take a little longer than normal. I will do them. There are four of them, and one of them is really long, but I will do them one at a time. All right, so the closed session of June 9th, the report out is, the PMB met in closed session to discuss proprietary matters concerning directors, personnel, and finances. We also had a closed session meeting on June 16th. The report out is, the PMB met in closed session to discuss a confidential compromise agreement, personnel issues, and other aspects of our current financial situation. On June 23rd, we met in closed session, and the report out is, the PMB met in closed session to discuss confidential personnel, contract, and financial matters. We also met in closed session on June 30th, and the report out, this is the long one. Let me scroll. The PMB met in closed session to deal with proprietary financial issues. The PMB also adopted the following motion on LSB soliciting funding from local governments. And I'm about to read the motion because we've agreed that the motion didn't need to be a closed session motion, but that's when it came up. Whereas the local station boards and Pacifica National Board are not give or get boards typical of many nonprofits, and whereas Pacifica is currently in a dire financial situation, and whereas local station boards are in the best position to make contact with local city council members and other locally elected officials, and whereas some local officials may have discretionary budget authority that can be distributed to local nonprofits, therefore be it resolved that the chair of the Pacifica National Board shall work with local station board chairs, who shall in turn work with their local station board members, listener, sponsor, and staff, to identify existing relationships that may be leveraged and seek volunteers where there are not. Be it further resolved that these volunteers shall seek access to discretionary funds for the Pacifica Foundation. So that's the matter of the report outs from previous sessions. The next preliminary item on the agenda is excused absences. Would someone like to move to excuse?
Yeah, I move to excuse everybody.
Thanks, Jim. Is there a second?
I'll second that.
Thanks, Ali. Are there any objections to the motion to approve the excused absences? Hearing none, those absences are excused. The next item is identifying timekeepers. I need a timekeeper for people.
This is Heather. I'll do it.
Thanks, Heather. And I need a timekeeper for items. Can we get a volunteer? Susan, are you volunteering? I sort of see your hand being raised, but you're having difficulty unmuting.
Yes, I volunteer.
Got it. Okay. So that takes us to,
Chair, can I be recognized?
Yes, you may, Lawrence. Happy birthday.
Thank you so much. Thank you. I appreciate the positive advice as Susan always does. So in regards to, I'm gonna ask, James McFadden to read one of the motions. I have to go. I'm gonna try to come back, but I got a lot going on. Our secretary, has not been available to, listen to the Zoom, recording, the retransfer recording. And I try to do it, but I am not a secretary, so I'm not that type of material. So I'd like to ask if we could put our report governance at the very end, and I'll see what I can do. But if not, Chair, can I request that, at the next meeting, if there's a meeting next week, if the governance committee could get their report then?
I think that seems reasonable, Lawrence.
Point of information, Madam
Chair. Go ahead, Jim Dingman.
Happy birthday, Lawrence.
Thank you, Jim. The Yankees are on top 6-2, just to let you know.
Okay.
All right.
All right, so I'm going to leave and I'm going to try to come back, Chair.
Thank you. Great. Go ahead. So agenda approval. So now that Lawrence has put that out there, let me, run quickly through the agenda so that people know what's on it, and then we can work on it. So after agenda approval comes approving minutes of the June 9th session, 3-minute item, ED report and Q&A, 20-minute item, CFO report and Q&A, 10-minute item. Item number 6 is committee reports. There are a bunch of them. We go audit committee for 15, coordinating committee for 3, finance committee for 10, governance committee for 10, although that's what Lawrence just suggested, that we move it towards the end, elections committee for 5, programming committee for 20, there are several mentions in the appendix, strategic planning committee for 3, personnel committee for 3, and then development task force for 5, COVID-19 task force for 3, technology task force for 5, that's item 6. After that comes unfinished business, of which I don't believe we have any. Item number 8 is new business. It's a 10-minute item. Let me just add that Susan Young sent me a motion, in fact, sent it to all of the PNB, and I meant to put it on the agenda, but I did not, so I would argue that it goes under 8 new business items. And then number 9 is adjourned to closed session at a time certain of 10:30. Can I get someone to move that we approve the agenda?
I move approval.
Thanks, Susan. A second?
I second.
Thank you, Jim. Any discussion of the agenda?
Madam Chair?
Yes, go ahead, Susan.
I have one question. It may come up that we will need and maybe we need to deal with this in closed session, but that we need to schedule ourselves for a special emergency in case there is a need for emergency personnel action. Don't know if that should be something that we take up in this meeting by scheduling a PNB meeting, or if it's something that we take up in the closed session.
So that's a good question. My gut instinct is that we could certainly schedule it in open session, but there may be some, but we can't talk about what we would do, except in closed session, because I think I know what you're talking about, but maybe not everybody else knows what you're talking about. And so people may have questions. And if people have questions, then it will be difficult to, take care of that in open session.
I'll hold it for closed session.
Okay. Any other discussion about the agenda? Hearing none, let me just note that, I'm sorry. So let's just be, to be clear, what Lawrence was talking about, he never actually said governance committee. So when we sent the agendas out, the governance committee, there was just a placeholder for motions from the governance committee. And Marion, James McFadden just pasted in a governance committee motion into the chat. So that will be for item number 8, new business. Okay.
Point of personal privilege?
Yeah, go ahead, Beth.
I can't see the chat.
I know you can't see the chat. The motion isn't there yet. We'll read it out, obviously. Someone could send it. Thank you.
I'll email it right now.
Thank you, Paulina.
Seeing it in instant. Thank you.
Actually, Susan sent it to the whole PMB when she sent it out earlier. I just was the moron who failed to put it on the agenda, so. Yes. Any other discussion of the agenda? If not, are there any objections to approving the agenda as slightly modified from the one that was emailed, which is that it now includes Susan Young's motion under number 8, and it has moving the governance committee, down on the list of committees to give Lawrence a chance to return to the meeting? Any objections to that agenda as slightly modified from what was emailed? Hearing none, the agenda is approved. Okay, so that takes us up to approving minutes of the open session of June 9th. Paulina sent out minutes that Paulina had sent out previously So
quite a few weeks ago, yeah.
Yeah, quite a few weeks ago. So the question is, were there any corrections to the open session minutes of June 9th?
Julie, may I speak?
Yes, go ahead, Paulina.
I believe that there were corrections at the time, and I implemented them and sent out the corrected
ones. Oh, right. Sean Rhodes asked for some.
That's correct, yeah.
And maybe some other people, too. That's correct. Okay. Thank you, Paulina. Go ahead, Susan.
I move approval.
Oh, thank you. Is there a second? Is there a second to approve the minutes of June 9th?
This is Teresa. I'll second.
Thank you.
Point of information, Madam Chair.
Sure, Teresa.
Can you tell me why Paulina is listed twice?
Yes, because one of those is Paulina as the streamer of this meeting, and one of Paulina as the secretary.
Okay, thank you. Just wonder. Thank you.
No worries. Are there any objections to the motion to approve the minutes of June 9th? Hearing none, the minutes are approved. Thank you, Paulina. Cooking with gas, folks. We're now up to the ED report and Q&A. Stephanie, are you?
Yes, I am here.
Go ahead. Take it away.
Thank you. The first thing I want to report about is the, the national fund drive that we just completed. Many thanks to the multiple staff members and people from every division who assisted with this event. So it was a fund drive on July 5th and 6th, and the theme of it was Pacifica Radio, Building a Better World Since 1949. And we had special appeals and special programming that was running from 6 a.m. to 8 p.m. or 9 a.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern for those 2 days. The total raised for the whole event, the 2-day event, was $31,865. The total raise that was during the call center, via the call center, was about $26,500. We raised about $15,000 the first day and about $10,000 the second day. The total raised via website donations was a little over $5,000. So the last fund drive that the archives did was an emergency fund drive that they held in April, and that was for 1 day, and it raised $41,000. And then their fund drive that they had last year in November, which was kind of their regularly scheduled fund drive, raised $63,000. So it didn't raise quite the amount that was anticipated or hoped for, but it was a great blueprint on getting everybody to work together and focus on a national fund drive theme and appeal. So we are having follow-up meetings. I will be working, speaking with Mark Torres the next couple of days just to kind of have a breakdown of the event and what worked, what didn't work, what can we do to move forward in the future to raise more funds, that kind of thing. So we will definitely be talking about those. So that was, we're planning and hoping to try to do a national fund drive, a minimum of at least 4 times per year. And one of the things that we're going to do is obviously start working on it, the next one. And actually I want to map out the entire year in advance so we can start working on the special programming, developing new premiums, and really working, to get this done on a regular basis and having a strong team of staff members that are willing to help and put that together. Does anyone have any questions on that?
Darlene, I do. Can you just say again what the grand total was? I was listening to the breakdown, but
the total raised was $31,865.
Okay. Thank you.
That is also the gross amount. So we will be deducting from that any costs that were associated with the call center and any other additional, mailing out of the premium costs.
Susan Young, did you have a question?
Yeah, a couple of questions. One, does that amount include the donations that were made by board members? That's number one. Number two, have the commitments of board members been fulfilled? And number three, how close is that to closing the annual gap for making, for covering the budget, particularly payroll for PRA?
To my knowledge, it does not include the generous donations from our board members, so we will definitely add that. I do not know if any additional money has been received from the board members that pledged their gift, but we can always pull that number and try to get that number. It's obviously helpful toward helping them reach their payroll for the next couple of months, but it isn't a... it isn't a long term. What we're going to do with that is sort of divide up on paper, but divide up that revenue, the net amount, to help offset the past due payables or the past due central services, to the archives from those stations that are behind. So it will make a bit of a dent in some of those past dues, but, it will, every dollar raised is helpful to the archives at this point. Did I answer all three?
I see Ali Lex's, yes, you did catch all three of those. And then okay. I see Ali and James McFadden's hands, and I'm just going to make sure that you guys are asking questions, you know, relative to the national fundraiser, because I think Stephanie's going to talk about other stuff, but just wanted to. So, Ali, go.
Yeah. So, I'm just a little unclear. Was this a national fundraiser for the Pacifica Radio Archives, or for Pacifica Foundation, or a little bit of both? It seems that it's was framed more as a fundraiser for the archives. And whatever it is, that's fine. I'm just unclear as to what this was a fundraiser for, where the money's going.
What we're focusing on when we first started talking about it with the strategic planning committee or the Bellum committee about this is having a national fund drive that would be earmarking funds toward the divisions that were at the most need of money. So at the time that this was first discussed, the archives were not going to be meeting payroll at all. I mean, for the next few months. And so it was decided upon that the funds would be earmarked toward the central services that were past due from the divisions to the archives. I would guesstimate that the next national fund drive would be earmarked toward KPFK. I'm only throwing that out there at this point just because there are expenses that are incurred that we're not, you know, that we weren't aware of with the air conditioning, and we have our electric, you know, the electric bill that is going to have to start getting paid pretty soon. And so we will earmark those funds to go to the national, it's a national fund drive because it's all across the network, but the funds will be earmarked toward those groups that are in the greatest need.
And James McFadden and Jim Dingman. McFadden.
Thank you. I had one question. As I recall, this fund drive, this national fund drive occurred while one of the stations was in the middle of a drive. Is that correct? And if so, how was the money raised during the national fund drive in comparison to what was not raised? You know, what was kind of like the daily average during in that one station? And then I have let me get an answer to that, and then I have a quick follow-up.
Stations were not, to my knowledge, stations were not in fund drives at the time. KPFK had just ended a fund drive. I mean, one of the conclusions that we are kind of drawing based upon how this fund drive was less money was raised than anticipated was because we were just coming off of not only a three-day holiday, where we didn't really have a lot of listeners that maybe would have popped in right after the holiday, but also because we had just finished fund drives at other stations. So it was literally just like a 12 to 24 hour halt in fundraising only to have this start again.
Okay. Thanks. And then, the other thing was, I was, curious if any, if in management, was testing at all the phone banks to see how they were reacting. Cause, I made phone calls myself just to see how quickly. And, in one case, after many, many rings, I'm calling the numbers that were given out at KPFA, it forwarded me to a phone bank system that said that it was WBAI, so I assume it just got forwarded, and said we're not in the middle of a fundraiser. So the message was a bit strange. Oh. And then when I called the other number that was given out on the KPFA I'd listened to one of the shows and got the two numbers. Then I was just put on hold for a long time. And I thought that was a good sign. I thought, oh, if I'm on hold for a long time, we must be getting lots of donations. So I just wanted to bring those things to your attention.
No, I appreciate that. So I have not worked with the call center before. I would assume and hope that they would be able to provide a detailed report of the phone calls coming in and the amount of time that people spoke with them on the phone, the amount of time they were on hold. So we'll definitely ask for such a report and then also bring that to their attention. As far as being transferred to WBAI, we were using the WBAI phone center, phone call center. We had some issues trying to determine which center to use, and the decision based upon who was able to handle the influx of calls was WBAI, because they were ending a fund drive, and we just extended the call center for another 2 days. But they were given the scripts and everything, so I'm not too sure why someone that answered the phone didn't know what to say.
The problem, I think, is that when you got the WBAI, it would come on with a message that says, we're not in the middle of a fund drive. And that would have confused any donors, I know. You know, and then it said, but stay on the line and we'll get your, you know, get to you. And so that was a strange message, you know, automated message that came on.
Yeah, that is a mistake from the call center, because they did receive the wording, and I was part of those emails that were going back and forth between Mark and Berthold and the call center, letting them know when the fund drive would be starting, the script that they were to be saying, details on the premium. So I'm not too sure why that popped up when you called, but I'm glad you did. Thanks for letting us know, because we can ask them about it.
Yeah, thanks, James. Next is Jim Dingman, then Jim Sager. Go ahead, Dingman.
Yes, I look forward to a robust after-action report on all this, so lessons learned can be applied to the next drive. One comment that I saw that came up from a listener member, and just to throw in the hopper, is this person said that they'd given generously to the archives in this drive, but then the question they raised was, how does this relate to them in terms of their status with a particular station? In other words, let's say they gave $500 to the archives, but does that mean that they didn't give, you know, they might have been a BAI member or a KPFK member? And I just want to throw that in the mix, because that sort of took me, you know, sideways. When I read that, I said, oh, that's an interesting problem. How do you deal with that? But it sounds great, first attempt to do it, and I look forward to hearing the critiques, and obviously we can learn from them and do a much better job the next time.
And I'll just add to what Jim Dingman said, that Stephanie, I made sure you saw that email. So, I mean.
Yes, I did.
Got it. Okay. So next is Jim Sagerton, then Teresa. Jim.
Thank you, Chair. Couple of points that I hope we will be looking at in our evaluation of this fund drive. And one thing that I think was important, possibly more important or at least as important as donor fatigue or fund drive fatigue, would be the fact that we only had one premium, one thank you gift, and it was a pretty high ticket item for our audiences and what we're accustomed to. It was a $250 item for the thumb drive, the 64 gigabyte Voices That Changed the World thumb drive, which is a wonderful thing, but it's been used repeatedly over the years. And so if we could try this again, hopefully not having to wait several months, but quickly, if we got a premium that was more fresh, up-to-date, would be good. We just need new material generally for these fund drives. I agree with Stephanie about KPFK next time. Maybe after that, KPFT. The malfunction in the phone system, I agree, was originated with the phone center. WBI was not coming out of a fund drive. We don't do regular fund drives, as many of people on this board know. We do fundraising every day for a period of time every day. So we're never coming out of a fund drive. So that message must have been old. I don't know what happened there.
Jim, your time is up.
Thank you. If I could just say one more thing. We do have a detailed report coming. Berthold has been in touch with the call center, and he's getting, a detailed breakdown of the phone center activity and the costs, and that'll be forthcoming.
Thanks, Jim. Teresa Allen?
Hi. I did notice that the drive in November raised $60,000. the one-day drive earlier this year raised, I think, 40,000, and now this one it is 2 days and raised even smaller. So it appears we're either doing it wrong, maybe confusing our listeners, or we are going to the well too often. It would be nice if people gave $100 or somehow if we could motivate those people without even taking a premium, or if we could find a premium for smaller amounts if we thought that was the problem. If our next pitch is going to be for KPFK, I think that we need to consider, they need to consider whether they need to have a capital drive and get money in advance with before they even go on the air, if they're going to, if they need to fix their AC. And if they're going to, I don't think people want to give to pay our past due bills. So if they're behind in their, in paying their electricity, somehow they need to fold that into their capital drive, you know, AC and paying for, you know, we need to be cool. Something, maybe find some people, some individuals, not people that are considered grants, find some people that will match what they raise to pay for the AC.
Tracy, your time is up.
So anyway, if we're going to go after KPFK, I think we're going to have to try something different and work, do something in advance. Thank you.
Thanks, Stephanie. That's all the questions. Did you want to continue with other items?
Yes, and I completely agree that I think that the premium has been overused, and so a lot of people who most likely donated and received that premium in November, you know, people who didn't buy it had a second chance in April, and then were, you know, just turning around a few months later and pretty much asking our same audience to purchase again a premium that maybe they had already purchased or they couldn't afford to. So there are discussions to create multiple premiums at different prices and also just use more of our logoed items that we can sell, which then again, not sell, but you know, as a gift with your donation, which then also just helps with our overall marketing as well. So people are happy to carry around a tote or a coffee cup or something that has our logo on it. So yes, and I also agree that we need a theme sort of behind it or a goal. Again, people, you're completely right. People do not want to pay people's past due bills. They don't want to pay people's salaries either. But one of the things that I was looking at in general was to try to have a capital campaign that's running for, you know, as far as fundraisers. We need a capital campaign for KPFK. We need a capital campaign for KPFT. So we've already started discussions with the capital campaign and planning that out for KPFT. And with any sort of longer term capital campaign, I've done multiple capital campaigns before, and usually by the time you ask the public for financial support, you are already 50 to 60%, if not more, to your goal. So you just kind of create this triangle of your capital, your pyramid of givers, and you break it down by, you know, if you're needing to raise $1 million, you have, there's a formula that you plug in with how many donors you need at, you know, $200,000 or more, or how many donors at $500,000. And then you fill up that pyramid with not only the number of donors that you need, but then if you need to get two donors at that level, you're going to have to ask anywhere between 5 to 7 donors who have the capacity to give that gift amount. So with any sort of capital campaign, you really do have to have a strong grasp on your donor base and your listeners. And again, that's where it comes into play, that we have clean data in our software and that we have good stewardship with the donors that we have. So it makes it very easy for us to then be able to reach out to them with their proposal on what they can donate toward building repairs and general operating support for long-term sustainability for the stations. And then by the time you reach the public, you're then being able to ask for $100 gifts, $1,000 gifts, you know, things that are much more manageable for people. So as far as, you know, continuing, we're continuing, with our revenue, trying to, you know, generate some revenue generating ideas. In addition to obviously needing to cut back on our expenses, but we will again try to continue with a national fundraiser, hopefully with quarterly national drives, trying to time them out so we're not interfering or coming off of another station's fund drive. We're also looking at doing a national e-blast, possibly, you know, coming from the chair or from myself, that is asking for donations as well. And trying to, that serves kind of as a double purpose, because we'll be able to work on with the stations to give us and work on getting clean lists, which we need of our member base anyway. There is still the possibility, we've mentioned this before, if there's any ability to rent out office space, if there's any space at KPFA, KPFK, KPFT. Obviously though, with KPFK and KPFT, we would need to refurbish the building in order to make it lease ready. And that would again also involve sort of that capital campaign concept for those buildings. Another thing that we want to try to do, which mentioned before, is, you know, really working on a major donor program and getting clean lists, making sure the data in our database is where it needs to be and that it's managed correctly, and that we can really take a good grasp and do sort of wealth management assessments of some of those donors that have been long-term donors. And maybe, and then again, reach out to people that haven't donated in a while and then give them phone calls and emails and just start that stewardship to figure out why they're not giving and, you know, what they're looking for us to have to give them as far as programming or better stewardship in order to have them give, to continue to give to us. As mentioned earlier, we're still working on any sort of local government discretionary funds and just kind of reaching out to our council members and our district representatives and county supervisors, and also trying to get in the possible loop of any CDBG grant funding, which is community development block grants. We're also looking at charitable annuities, private placement bonds, and what we're doing with those is that we'll be bringing in individuals that can sort of educate us and get us up to date on what that means and if those are even possibilities for us to be able to generate revenue. We're also reaching out to some community foundations. I've been meeting with multiple community foundations just to kind of let them know who we are and, you know, why we need to be on their list of suggested nonprofits when someone comes in with the donor advised funds and they're looking to put money back into the community. Most of the community foundations will give recommendations as to who they can give money to. And I'm just, you know, wanting to make sure that we are on those lists. So a lot of that is just meeting with the grant managers and with the donor advised fund managers and just letting them know who we are and why it would be important for their donors to direct money to us. We're also still working on any sort of community partnership or underwriting programs so we can try to be that community radio station that is supporting our community by giving, you know, some local individuals an opportunity to be able to say over the airwaves that, you know, they promote free speech, they promote our mission, and being able to, you know, generate revenue on that. With grants, you know, again, grants are a longer process, but I am working on archive preservation grants where they may not necessarily be that our financial status and financial kind of instability doesn't really have a bearing on the archives and archive preservation. So there are a few foundations that I know the archives have applied for in the past, but we're working on rewriting those grants to kind of focus on the budget of the archives rather than an emphasis on the overall budget of the foundation. And then also working with some foundations that are focusing on website and app development, which again doesn't necessarily, they're not looking too much on our financial instability, but what they're looking at and what being able to promote in a grant and with discussions that I've had with some foundations is that we need to be able to increase our presence with our website, our branding, social media, and our apps in order to generate more income. So they would be helping us in general in the long run. So again, as we've said, and Beth has said it as well, we do have a robust development committee that meets on a regular basis. So If anybody has any revenue generating ideas, please feel free to send them to Beth Van Gutten or to myself. And we greatly appreciate anyone's input on this. Anyone have any questions before I move on?
I see Susan Young's hand and then Jim Dingman. Susan, go ahead.
I just wanted to bring to your attention and to Beth that I had talked to Beth about coming forward with an underwriting, appropriate underwriting authorization. I have drafted that motion, and it will be under Section 8 of today's agenda.
Jim Dingman.
Yeah, I hope going forward that we don't miss the boat this time on getting the process to apply for CPB money early on. And I hope that some folks are going to be appointed, or someone would act like a CPB czar to make sure that everything is straightened out in terms of the compliance issues, which are quite complicated. But, you know, we're going to come out of the process in the next month or two with audits, and they need to be taken advantage of precisely for that reason. And of course, the other issue with the CPB is the weekly cumes of three of the stations. They have to go up quite significantly in order to get beyond the barriers that the CPB imposes, 80,000, 60,000 to 70,000in Houston, and 70,000 to 80,000 in New York are not enough. I'm talking about Los Angeles in the first case. So I'm just hoping that attention will be paid to that problem going forward. Thank you.
Any other questions for Stephanie before she continues? Go ahead, Stephanie.
That Jim was actually next on my list to talk about. So I'm assuming that you're self-identifying as wanting to assist and work on that committee or task force. She says with a smile, and he's silent. But we, you know, I'll pull you in regardless of whether you say yes or no. But we are working. I am looking very closely at the eligibility for 2023 CPB grant funding, and really taking a close look and working with John Amelia and others that are, you know, familiar with what we need to do. And I'm asking a lot of questions with organizations that do receive the funding, you know, just to make sure that we have a great list of the, you know, the specific requirements that we need to work on now in order to get that funding. And that we, you know, one of the things that has been made clear from individuals at CPB, that, you know, all or none, basically, that all of us, need to be in compliance. All of the divisions need to be in compliance in order to be eligible for the funding, and that each, you know, each grantee individually needs to meet the requirements that are set forth in the general provisions. So we're making sure that we, all of us, do meet those eligibility requirements. And as far as listener index requirements, very true. And one of the things that we need to do with the listener index requirements is that we need data from any two Nielsen radio survey periods within the 24 months preceding fiscal year 23. And the surveys need to be at least 6 months apart. So it's all those little, you know, little tiny things that are very quick to have them say, oh, this, you know, one little check where you didn't meet that one little requirement that was in the footnote on page, you know, 433 of the booklet. We want to make sure that we don't fall prey to any of those. And then also, based upon the range of our signals and the size of the communities that we serve, there is a minimum amount of non-federal funding money that we need to raise. It's somewhere like in around $500,000 per station that needs to be raised in non-federal funding. So I'm still working on getting the clarification of that to make sure that we meet those requirements as well. I shall move on. So of course, any sort of revenue generating is important, but still the main priority also is that we need to reduce our expenses. Expense reduction has, oh, go ahead. I'm sorry. Questions?
Yes. If I may be recommended. Yeah. Quick question. Regarding the CPB, what types of revenues count as non-federal? Is that memberships? Is that sponsorships? Is that capital? What counts towards that?
To my knowledge, it is membership and underwriting. So that would be any sort of sponsorships and grant funding as well. So that does count.
That's right. As long as it's non-federal. And the other thing about, the membership stuff is it has to be net of premiums. So, okay. Go ahead, Stephanie, continue.
Correct. Correct. Yeah. And those are, again, as we work on, you know, there's so many different types of premiums that are being used across the organization, is that we are trying to get a better grasp on all the costs that are associated with those premiums, so we don't run into, you know, anything like that, which has happened in the past, that we do make sure that all costs associated with those premiums are accounted for. So as far as reducing expenses, we are, as I said, you know, one of the things that we're trying to do and that we're trying to organize, and I'm sure we'll hear more about it in the next, either today or, you know, within the next week or so, is it scheduling some informal conversations, sort of educational workshops for anyone that is so inclined to, you know, on the board that is so inclined to take a part of it, which would be information that would educate us on charitable annuities, private bonds, bankruptcy, you know, signal swapping. Again, none of those things are things that we're going to do as far as bankruptcy and signal swapping, but in order to make a decision about what we want to avoid, we need to educate ourselves on what that would entail. So we'll be having conversations regarding insolvency, and those will be scheduled for people to be a part of within the next couple of weeks. As far as reducing expenses, we are still working on a network-wide emergency expense management. In dealing with any sort of personnel, we are taking a very close look at hourly reductions for personnel, and also taking into consideration that the money that we save with some of these hourly reductions may be too insignificant and detrimental in the long run. So we need to make sure that the laying off of individuals or cutting back of hours, anything like that, isn't going to have a substantial long-term impact. We have seen that at stations in the past where key personnel have been let go or hours have been cut back so significantly that they can't we're not giving them the opportunity to perform their job or giving them the tools that they need to perform their job in the best way that they can. And then it has a long-term detrimental impact on the station. We also don't want to run the risk of losing employees who maybe are not able to sustain themselves on their and their families on a decreased salary, of just leaving the station. And then we would, you know, have an influx of end of employment payouts, and that we don't want to lose any staff that is vital to the daily operation of each station. We are also, you know, making sure that we're consistent with the staff management plan, and that we want to make sure that any reductions that are implemented at each station that is struggling to pay their past due payables, including our National and Archive Central services. And you know, as we've said before, it's great that the stations are working so incredibly hard and everybody is pitching in to make sure that they're raising funds to meet payroll and tax and health benefit payments. But again, that's at the continued expense of not paying the critical operational and infrastructure bills, and the amount of past due payables at many of the stations is just continuing to grow and is becoming quite staggering. So we have implemented, you know, staff reduction hours already at one station, with a motion that was passed by the PMB last month that took effect in the beginning of this week. And, that has decreased the expenses with payroll, of $3,000 to $4,000 per month. So again, we're looking at, you know, moving forward with that. We have a volunteer GM that's in place, and, they're, you know, trying to get everything, so far it's working out okay. So, and then we're still working on, you know, making sure that when we're working with any sort of staff reduction, again, that we have a lot of SAG-AFTRA members that are part of our stations, and we want to make sure that we are doing everything we can to be in compliance and fair with employees and working very closely with SAG-AFTRA and following their deadlines and their procedures and negotiations and discussions to make sure that we are doing everything we can to support the employees in making these cuts. Every single week, we are, Julia and I are continuing to look at past due payables and the aged payables for each station, and painfully determine, Julia does the majority of that work, determining what vendors will not receive payment that week, and then trying to talk to those vendors and let them know. She gets phone calls, I get phone calls pretty much on a daily basis, from people that we owe money to, and just being able to develop a relationship with them and let them know that we're doing the best we can to try to get payments to them. And if necessary, then trying to negotiate some sort of long-term payment plan. So that is something that we do on a daily basis. Anybody have any questions before I move on?
I don't see any hands.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Again, one of the things that is, one of the expenses that we are taking a close look at on, touched on a little bit, is the high cost of some of the premiums. So I know that, you know, we've mentioned before, we don't want to keep, you know, quote unquote, selling items during our fund drives, but they are bringing in money, but, you know, to what long-term expense? So it's not even just the physical expense of sort of paying for the premiums and the individuals who pitch them, but are they costing us, our listeners, in the long run? So, you know, as I've said before, we have a very dedicated group of listeners. We are obviously sort of losing listeners, but we are gaining individuals that are coming in and buying some of these items. But again, are we just creating some transactional donors who are only giving money to get the product that we're pitching, but they're not giving and making a donation to support the mission of the organization. And then when a lot of these transactional donors need to refill or buy more of the product that was their gift, they're going directly to the person or this website where this product can be found, and they're buying it directly from them, and therefore we have just lost a donor or a potential long-term listener. So again, those are things that it's money that's serving its purpose now, but again, long-term effect, what is it doing to our listener base? We also are taking a close look at consultants. We've had kind of a discussion with this before, but we really do need to take a close look at what some of the consultants are being paid, as well as some of the programmers that are being paid, and what can we do to reevaluate or take a closer look at some of the contracts that the stations have with the programmers, and try to revise some of those contracts to make sure that they're pitching and that they also understand that they're working for the Pacifica Foundation, and we have a mission, and their programs and what they do need to support that mission, and that includes raising funds for us as well. Anybody have any questions?
I don't see any hands.
Okay. One of the things that is coming up that was just brought up today by the membership director at KPFK is that KPFK will be celebrating its 63rd anniversary on July 26th. So they are, you know, the everybody at KPFK, this just came out in an email this afternoon. So there is now active discussion about making sure that we have a celebration that day, maybe not a heavy fund drive day, but it, you know, obviously making it something that people can donate to, possibly $63 for the 63rd birthday, you know, or something that is celebrating the history of KPFK and the benefits of what we've, you know, done for the community for that many years. And so we'll be working on special programming for that day. Hopefully a lot of advertising and promotion, getting press releases out there, and just letting people know not only is this, you know, a celebration, but also use it as a marketing event to let people know that KPFK is here and we're strong, 63 years strong, and we're still moving forward. So we will definitely be doing that. We're still working on stewardship. I know that at KPFK, according to Allegiance, and I think I talked about this a couple of weeks ago, is that there were only 5,803 donors who had made a gift of at least $25 in the past year. And even during COVID, where the stations all did take a big hit, we had 10,000 donors at that time. So it's, you know, close to half that have been left. So again, it's another perfect example of kind of using the data in our database to really get a good grasp on the people that we have that are donating and making sure that we're doing everything that we can to cultivate those donors. And particularly with the donors that just donated with this last 2-day fund drive, I'm looking forward to getting the report of who's donated and their contact information, so I can personally reach out to them and thank them for that. And we'll just get them on that road of good stewardship, and we'll keep them in the pipeline to be able to become long-term donors for us, and hopefully then turn their gift that they made into a monthly donation. So as far as, I know Julia will kind of cover the money that's in the, you know, the money that we have, money in and money out, as far as what's in the bank for certain, in general, and then the past due payables. But, you know, one of the things that we just need to really focus on is that these past due payables, which we have been avoiding for many, many years, are coming up and, calling. You know, so we have past due payables, some that are over 2 years old. And so a lot of those vendors are owed the money. They need to be paid. And those bills have just kind of been ignored for a while. So those are, even though we, of course, are trying to cut back on expenses and generate as much revenue as possible, we do have the reality that there is a significant amount of past due payables that we can't just keep ignoring. We need to figure out a way to negotiate as much as we can and try to make sure that we're giving even just some money to some of these groups, so certain services aren't cut off that are imperative to the daily operations of each of the stations. You know, other things to look at as we move forward, we need to start looking at actively looking at developing our budgets for 2023, and it would be wonderful to be able to get all those budgets, you know, proposed and projected budgets in the works prior to the start of the fiscal year, and also taking in consideration when, you know, things to remember is that we're doing a great job and we set aside some funds to pay off the interest payments that were due with the FJC loan, but we also do have to realize that once the year starts again in 2023, we will still have those. We will have additional interest payments to pay. So it's great that we're doing a good job paying those off, but we also, I mean, the interest, but we, you know, do have to make sure that we put into the budget a lot of these expenses that are just kind of, I think, set aside and don't really have a line item for. So I think that's about it. If anybody has any questions, I will take those, and I'm sure I can answer also any additional questions or when Julia makes her report.
I see that Jim Dingman has raised his hand. Jim, go ahead.
Yes. Can you, in open session, give us some sense of the specifics of outstanding payables, what the gross numbers are? How they're broken down, something so that we have a better sense of that, or the public does?
Not to sort of bounce this to Julia, but she would have more details. The last time that we look at it as a, you know, week to week, station to station, or division to division, the last time that I reported out, I think last week, we were a little less than $100,000 in the bank, and I believe we were a little over $500,000 in past due payables.
You have a sense of how that
that's is. That's across the board, all divisions.
Okay. All right.
And Jim Sagerton has his hand up. Go ahead, Jim.
Thank you, Chair. Stephanie, I just wanted to say thank you for that comprehensive, detailed, accurate report. I've been on this board for a few years now. I think that's the best report I've ever heard. I think it's the best report you've perhaps ever given. That was just a fact-filled, information-filled, as far as I'm concerned, accurate report of the situation. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Anybody else have questions for Stephanie? All right, then. Before we move on to the next agenda item, I just want to make sure that Mariana Dane realizes that Marianne Martinez is now present in the meeting. Okay. So the next item on the agenda was the CFO report and Q&A, and that's a 10-minute item. Julia, are you available to speak now? And is your microphone working?